Hey everyone, this is Andy, better known as Love Retro BTW on Twitter, X, Threads, IG, and Cafe BTW on TikTok and YouTube. A quick update that the Cafe BTW podcast is taking a very long hiatus, but I still have something really amazing to share with you. We have a fantastic retro gaming community on Twitter X, where we've crossed well over 2,000 passionate members. And if you're a lover of retro gaming, this is the perfect place to share your content, showcase your pickups, or just chat about your favorite old school games. To dive into nostalgia and become a part of the thriving community, click in the show notes on the Cafe BTW link tree or go right to my Twitter X profile on Love Retro BTW. And now, without further ado, gear up for another sensational episode of the Gamers Week Podcast.
Coming up on Gamers Week Podcast. Maybe either Ryan is thinking that this is truly going to hurt Sony and I don't want any part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's just saying that things are changing and I just want to go out on top.
Right.
He wants to pull an Aaron Rodgers, you know, go out on top.
Oh, gosh. So Ryan's going to, like, fall down the stairs on his last day carrying his box out to his car.
It's like, all right, everybody, it's been fun. I'm out of here. If I could just get some ointment to put on this, I'm going to try and stand up on my leg. Oh!
Very badly burnt.
So, Donnie, are you disappointed over the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce relationship?
I couldn't care less.
I know that you've had your eye on Travis Kelce.
Like, I hate everything lately.
Oh, no. Are you becoming a grumpy old man?
I think I am. And I'm kind of at the point where maybe I want to just disconnect and go off and live someplace where nobody else is there. Just sit me in a shack with my retro stuff and I'll be happy.
And then all he needs for fun every once in a while is to go outside and shake his fist at a cloud.
Damn you!
Gets back in.
Ah, that was satisfying as hell. All right, back to Textures.
And some lukewarm tea.
So I'm a person that can drink tea piping hot, lukewarm like bathwater, or on ice.
Now I have questions about what kind of baths you're taking.
Scalding hot all the way.
Hmm. All right, then. Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 92, and today is Wednesday, September 27th, 2023. Thanks so much for tuning in, everyone. My name is Blue Williams, and I'll be your host for this evening. But I am not alone. As you have heard, I do have my two fine co-hosts with me. My first co-host knows what it's like when your parents wander onto the set of your latest OnlyFans production. And when my second co-host wins the lottery, he'll be using the money to open a Night Trap-themed swingers mansion.
Are you going to be an auger or a vampire? That's the question. Make your choice at the door.
Please, everyone, say hello to Ryan Payne, a.k.a. Retro Game Brews, and the one and only Donnie G.
Can I have traps in this mansion?
I think when you win the lottery, you can build almost any kind of mansion you want.
And do I have to put my dad in the credits at the end of the scene?
Oh, no.
I hope you got him to sign a waiver, right?
He's just there as a consultant. Do it again, but with feeling.
All right, let's get the show started with our reviews, reactions, and requests. At Slices of Pies says, great podcast, and we'll definitely be listening to you from now on. Awesome.
Woohoo!
At Mr. Knight Rider says, episode 69 plus 22. So who's buying the new X cylinder that has no disk drive?
X cylinder.
And then Tony Majors emailed in to say, on a recent episode, I was reminded that just listening does not express to you the pleasure I get from listening to the show. I sometimes forget that the three of you are sending your voices out into the void, hoping it'll fall on eager ears. Just wanted to send a little thanks and that my ears are eager every week. I was made aware of your show from Retro Game Club and glad I gave you guys a shot. I went in with pessimistic prejudice because of the plethora of other rather meh video game podcasts, but you proved me wrong. I enjoy the chemistry you have and the format works. I really enjoy the Retro Rewind and History 101 segments. It's the cherry on top of an already great episode for me. Looking forward to a PRGE rundown. Thank you so much, Tony. That was really sweet of you to email in and say.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And yes, we will have a PRGE rundown when we come back.
And also, thanks for giving us a chance. I mean, it's not always easy to take on another podcast. I know it takes up a lot of time, but we really appreciate it, man.
And hopefully that PRGE rundown won't be within the county jail. the jury's out on that one.
My first co-host can make Merlot in the toilet.
And now, it's time for the Hey, Ma, what do you say to a vote in this week's very important poll?
Come on, Grandma, with you on our side, Cynthia Knight doesn't stand a chance.
Okay, I'll get my mouse. On second thought, I think I better sit this one out. You kids, go ahead. Want to have a talk with your old grandma. You're still having control problems, aren't you? I just don't feel confident, Harvey. Come with me. Want to let you in on a little secret. Here we are. Oops, I voted other. Oops, I voted other. I've heard of those. Do they work? Oops, I voted other outperformed every poll control product on the market today. Here, I'll show you. Imagine this pitcher of tea is really a gallon of your votes. See how its super thick protection allows for maximum absorbency without leaking? I'm impressed. Oops, I voted other can hold a lot of bullshit. And get this. Oops, I voted other is biodegradable. Now that's good for the environment. Hey, how do you know so much about oops, I voted other? Well, I'm wearing them. And I just did.
Nice vote, Grandma.
Thanks, oops, I voted other. Visit your local pharmacy and say, oops, I voted other.
The horse fart at the very beginning. Well done, Ryan. Well done.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. If you're not familiar, it's from the SNL skit, Oops, I Crap My Pants. I highly recommend check that out. All right, so every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP, our very important poll. And if you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. Question of the week was, with the 37th anniversary of the original Castlevania on the Famicom this week, what is your favorite Castlevania game? Coming in third place was Castlevania for the Nintendo Entertainment System with 17.2% of the votes. Coming in second was Super Castlevania 4, Whip It Good, with 21.1% of the votes. And taking it this week, by no surprise, was Castlevania Symphony of the Night with 45.5% of the votes. Now, 16.2% of you said other, so let's take a look at some of the comments from the poll. Starting off with Steven Malofsky, he said, I like the Order of Ecclesia because there are various levels where you can save the kidnapped town folks, and later they send you to do missions for them, like the artist that wants photos of various monsters, and when you go to the open castle at the end, it's a better journey than Symphony of the Night. Climahazard Zero said, Of the Castlevanias, Super Castlevania 4 is the peak of the series. Of the Metroidvanias, I actually like Order of Ecclesia the most, as it has the more engaging combat system.
I run Burgundy.
Love that confidence.
Thank you. 3Dvanias, my vote goes to Lament of Innocence. At Random Ninja 5 said Lord Shadows on PS3. Yeah, it was derivative of God of War, but I still liked it, and I feel like it got slept on by so many gamers. Though, to be fair, I never played the sequel.
To be fair.
At Crazy Arcadia says, Castlevania 3 on the NES, it's a technical marvel for the 8-bit, has a great OST, deep, moody atmosphere, lots of challenge and replayability with different routes and 4 playable characters. There's only one bad level, the Falling Rocks one. Otherwise, I think it's a masterpiece. And lastly, Depraved Slasher says, I dislike Castlevania, but I do want to try Castlevania DLC for Dead Cells.
I still have to try that too.
I haven't, just haven't played it yet.
Nice. So taking a look at our options for the week, Donnie, what are you going with?
This was hands down a tough question. Do you go for the classic, the one that started it all? Do you go for the second entry in the series when you go knocking on doors and it made it play like it was the Adventure of Link? And I was like, I don't know what they're trying to do here. Do you go to Castlevania 3, which was like an amazing game because you got to pick other characters? Rondo of Blood, Castlevania Bloodlines. What, so many damn choices. I, for one, am going to go with the original that started it all. That's a game that I can just immediately pick up. And I did speed run it a little bit a couple of years ago, or I attempted to speed run it, and I felt like I did pretty good with it. And it's a game that I kind of know inside and out, so I could pick it right back up and kind of ease back into the whole speed running thing. So I love it, and it's going to be my choice for this week.
All right. Are you muted, Rybad?
Yes, he is.
Yep. Nice. Well, Blue, what about you?
My choice was Castlevania 4, Super Castlevania. I know that it's kind of cool to hate Castlevania 4, and I'm not really sure why that is, but to me, it took everything that was great about the original Castlevania and put it in a game where the character moves so much more smoothly. And of course, you've got the 8-directional whip, which completely changes the gameplay. In my humble opinion, the music is great. The graphics are great. This was an easy choice for me.
And you have a good point about the whip. That's, you can just sit there and kind of let it hang, let it dangle, and then start flipping it in all directions. And you're like, I don't really even have to move. What?
So what? Many opportunities.
Leaving that one alone. What about you, Ryan?
I'm going to actually go with Donnie on this one. I love Castlevania, the whole series, even like 2. I know that's a one that gets a lot of hate as well. I haven't tried necessarily most of the modern ones because Metroidvanias aren't really my thing. So I'm more relegated to like Symphony of the Night before. I actually really like Symphony of the Night, strangely enough. But
that's not strangely enough. Everybody loves Symphony of the Night.
The thing is, though, Metroidvanias aren't really my thing. So it's
okay, fair. You know.
But the original Castlevania, I ran an RGB high score a few years ago and got a chance to watch people actually speed run the game. And it made it a lot more accessible to me at that point. So I played those games at basically the same time everybody else was playing them. And being able to just see the techniques and how people were running the game, it made it a lot more enjoyable for me because I kind of knew what to expect, but it's still challenging. You still have to pull off the maneuvers. It's a game that creates a lot of challenge, but there's a lot of reward with it as well. And it's just super, super fun. I think they nailed it with the first one. So I'm going to go with the original Castlevania.
Hear, hear.
That's the nice thing I think about this poll is there's not a bad choice. So
exactly.
Except for maybe Castlevania 64, but that wasn't on there. So it's fine. All right, let's move on to our patron shoutouts.
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. we have a new patron to announce. A big thank you and welcome to Seven Castle Forest. They'll be joining Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Canary, Doongi Forever, Ludo Timbo, Ducks in Disguise, Don't Make Me Pull Over This Car, Games with Coffee, Hybrid Divide, Matto1606, You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, the Red Ox PDX family, including Shannon and Luke, Shalaziel, Zach Huge Thanks, Number One Blue Sick Voice Fan, Sassy Sony, Evo Lust, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, Gametroid, Michael LeKite, Emo Esque, Bill Tucker, The Real Retro Game Brews, Fruitcake's Number One Stan, Ducks with Thick Thighs, Trailer Park Boner Pills. Okay. The longest butt crack you've ever seen. This has been the most extensive April Fool's prank ever played on a podcast, and only Blue figured it out. Wizard of Zardoz, Bops and Dugnut, Retro Blast Pat, Great Cyanman 81, BNT Zilla Guy, and Johnny Boombots. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
All right, let's move on to our headlines. And our headline segment is, of course, proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic, family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Right now, they're playing through Haunted House on the Atari 2600 and Zombies Ate My Neighbors. Visit them at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes. It must be spooky season coming up.
It's a little spoopy. So Atari 2600 Haunted House has the distinction of being the only game where it's acceptable just to be a white blob with eyes. just moving around a black screen. But I love Zombies Ate My Neighbors. That's one of my favorite games. It's a game that has so much variety in it. Each time you play through it, of course, there's some RNG that will dictate how the game goes, but it's one of those games you can either just enjoy with friends or speedrun if you really want to. And it's like 50-something levels. Plus, if you know what you're doing, you can go to the bonus levels. You can play it several different ways. It's so much fun, so much replayability. I absolutely love that game.
I loved the game when it first came out. I was a very big fan of it. I didn't appreciate it until I got a little bit older and when you had done it for the RGB High Score Challenge. Like really getting intimate with the game and knowing its secrets and the strategies and everything like that, that's what made me appreciate the game so much more. Because I didn't have the quote-unquote intelligence to do that whenever I was younger. I'm just like, oh, yeah, shoot, bam, 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 oh, I suck. And it wasn't until I got a little bit older and could be a lot better at video games and understand their strategies that I started to appreciate them more. So, yes, this is one hell of a great game.
You know, and you put up a good point here. I think most players, the first time they play it, that don't look into it, don't figure out more of the strategy behind it. It's like level 5 as soon as the Jasons with the chainsaw show up. It's like, f*** it, I'm dead. All right, first up from VentureBeat, SAG-AFTRA members overwhelmingly authorize video game strike. A SAG-AFTRA members overwhelmingly voted to authorize a strike on the interactive media agreement that covers members' work on video games. Of the 34,687 ballots cast, 98.32% voted in favor of the measure. However, the strike authorization is not a call for an immediate strike. Since October of 2022, SAG-AFTRA has been negotiating with video game companies that signed into the IMA. These include Activision, Blind Light, Disney Character Voices Incorporated, Electronic Arts, Formosa Interactive, Insomniac Games, Epic Games, Take-Two Interactive, VoiceWorks Productions, and WB Games. If a strike is called, it's not clear how other studios not covered in the IMA will respond. After 5 rounds of bargaining, it has become abundantly clear that the video game companies aren't willing to meaningfully engage on the critical issues: compensation undercut by inflation, unregulated use of AI, and safety. said Duncan Crabtree Ireland, SAG-AFTRA National Executive Director and Chief Negotiator. I remain hopeful that we will be able to reach an agreement that meets members' needs, but our members are done being exploited, and if these corporations aren't willing to offer a fair deal, our next stop will be to the picket lines. SAG-AFTRA Interactive Media Agreement Negotiating Committee and National Board unanimously recommended the strike authorization vote on September 5th, 2023. Next bargaining session is scheduled for September 26th to 28th. SAG-AFTRA hopes that the authorization will serve as added leverage in the talks between the union and the studios. Meanwhile, after almost 5 months, the Writers Guild strike officially ended at 12:01 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on Wednesday.
So you mean we're not going to continue to get such quality reality TV shows as Snake Oil and The Golden Bachelor because now the writers and the actors will be going back to work?
Wait. What is Snake Oil?
You must have one of those services where you can just skip past the commercials when you watch football.
Correct.
Snake Oil is another, as I gather just from watching the commercials, is one of those fascinating shows where they have contestants on and then they present them with a product that looks insane and they have to guess whether it's real or whether it's snake oil.
Got it. So the banana cleaner.
I guess.
Have you seen this?
No.
Did you say nana cleaner? Somebody's going to clean my nana?
Your not your grandmother.
Oh, banana.
Where are you taking me, Donald?
Oh. Are we sure that's for bananas?
Exactly. That's the point. It's probably not for bananas. At least it probably won't be used that way. You know, it says on the label, please do not use this in any other way than the intended purpose, but you know what's going to happen.
Like how they put on Q-tips, but everybody does.
Exactly.
Okay. I learned something today.
Didn't we all?
I don't know. You guys might have been intimately familiar with the banana cleaner before this.
All of a sudden, it's going to show up in Mr. Blue's stocking this year.
Writing that down.
I'll be out in a minute, honey.
Anyway, the video game strike.
Yes.
I think the fact that the Writers Guild strike finally has ended, that they have come to terms, hopefully that will provide some sort of, I guess, leverage or like a blueprint for how the video game strike can either be avoided altogether because they can come to an agreement, or maybe it will show the video game companies that the guild members are serious and they will strike to get what they need out of these agreements. So hopefully at this point, the people at the bargaining table will be done messing around and they can just come to an agreement.
Yeah, and the interesting part for us, at least, is that we're recording this on Wednesday and they're going to be negotiating together up until Thursday. So Friday, we actually may know what the output of this is going to be and as to whether or not they're planning on striking or not.
That's a good point. We always miss the good news on Thursday.
The curse.
In my personal opinion, I think video games can survive and thrive without big name Hollywood actors. I don't think Absolutely. They need them. Yeah. You know, is it interesting to hear an actor you've been familiar with for most of your life to suddenly appear in a video game? Like you hear their voice and you're like, oh, hey, wait a minute. I know that voice. Okay. And it's kind of like I'm, you know, I've got Kiefer Sutherland sitting on the couch right there with me narrating the story. Okay. Maybe, but do video games need it? I'm going to say no. If the story is good, if the gameplay is good, it can do just fine on its own.
Let's say we survived without voice acting for quite a while in video games.
Of course.
Right. And forever, every Keanu Reeves in Cyberpunk 2077, you've got a Megan Fox in Mortal Kombat 1.
She's in Mortal Kombat 1.
Sorry.
I was going to go pick it up.
That's a deal breaker.
Next up from GameIndustry.biz, Sony has a crucial decision to make after Jim Ryan's retirement. Jim Ryan's retirement from PlayStation was not entirely unexpected. Through various interviews in recent years, he's spoken about the challenges of living in the UK and working in the US. He's also coming up to 5 years in the role of CEO, which is around the point Sony likes to start moving its leadership on. Choosing his successor, however, is going to be quite the challenge. The industry is changing rapidly in terms of how games are monetized and distributed. Ryan leaves PlayStation as the business is looking to react to this change. The division is pushing hard into live service games while developing its PC and mobile games business. These are things somewhat out of the company's comfort zone, which is why it's been making strategic acquisitions, such as Bungie, to help it achieve its goals. So when you look for a new leader, would it perhaps make sense to bring in someone with a track record in live service and mobile, rather than an established PlayStation person whose primary experience has been launching major single-player AAA games and dedicated hardware? On top of that, whoever takes charge of PlayStation is going to have to navigate an extremely competitive landscape, with major corporations spending huge sums of money to get a foothold in games. And not just from Xbox and its acquisitions, but also from non-endemics like Amazon and Netflix. None of these businesses pose an immediate problem for Sony, but if they maintain their level of investment in video games, they may well become one. The other decision for Sony to make is what sort of CEO do they want to run PlayStation? Ryan came from a sales and marketing background, and that clearly worked. But there is something to be said for a leader with strong development credentials, too. Ryan ultimately leaves PlayStation in a strong position. It's the console market leader and growing its share with each passing month. Its global reach is expanding, and its games are continuing to win awards and break sales records. Whoever takes charge from here will be inheriting a company in an enviable position. And I would like to throw my hat in the ring.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine, though, if they turn CEO of PlayStation over to a mobile game person?
Oh God.
Oh, you said it. You said the bad word.
A mobile game microtransaction person. Can you just even dare to imagine what that would do to the entire landscape of the company?
Everything would be, every single game they put out would be stretched out, trying to get as much money from you as they can over the life of that game, with loot boxes, with skins, and everything that we hate is going to come to every single game.
Yeah, everything has a battle pass. Everything has all this extra stuff that you got to pay. No, that would be terrible.
If you want to do another race in Gran Turismo, you're going to have to wait 4 hours or buy some gems.
Oh, dude, yes.
You died to this boss. You want to try again? Well, that's going to be 30 gems.
Don't want to lose your hardcore character? Pay us $10 and you won't lose it.
Right. Oh, man. I will say sometimes you wish that option was available.
I mean, I understand the changing landscape of games, and I understand the company's desire to get into the live service market more and more, but they already bought Bungie. There's no need to essentially change your identity as a company. I don't think that's worth it. You're already the market leader. There's no need to change too drastically. It's like keep an eye on the future, but don't neglect what has made you successful.
I think this, though, is an interesting position that PlayStation is in right now. Yes, they are the leader. They are the ones who are kind of taking over. But one of the aspects of the marketplace right now is that Microsoft is kind of knocking at the door, and so are a lot of other companies. The person who takes this over has to be somebody who is invested enough and smart enough to continue the legacy of Jim Ryan in this sense. And that's a tough position to fill. I think Jim's getting out at the right time, honestly. Now, granted, I would imagine a lot of that has to do with the fact that, yeah, he's getting a little bit older. It's difficult for him living in the UK or Europe or wherever he is, and then working with a company that's mostly based out of the US. But I don't know if this is a good time to hand the reins over to someone new, considering what's on the horizon for PlayStation and gaming in general.
There's a significant change coming down the pipe with gaming, and you're correct. I think Ryan is getting out at a good time because whatever the reason is, they said that Sony tends to kind of push their executives out the door after 5 years. It's like, hey, do something good for the company and then get the hell out of here. It could be the fact that he sees what's on the landscape, what's on the horizon, doesn't want anything to do with it, and just decides to, like, I'm going to leave now. So whoever comes in do what you will, but I mean, it's with all the mobile gaming and everything like that, and just the cash grab that is gaming currently, that's a hell of a position to overtake.
Yeah. I mean, he did oversee Sony's part in the FTC Microsoft trial, like the company's participation in all of that. In a way, it was a big loss for Sony because mm-hmm. nothing went the way they wanted. And so maybe either Ryan is thinking that this is truly going to hurt Sony and I don't want any part of it. Mm-hmm. Or he's just saying that things are changing and I just want to go out on top.
Right.
He wants to pull an Aaron Rodgers, you know, go out on top.
Oh, gosh. Oh. So Ryan's going to like fall down the stairs on his last day carrying his box out to his car.
It's like, all right, everybody, it's been fun. I'm out of here. If I could just get some ointment to put on this, I'm going to try and stand up on my legs. Oh!
Very badly burnt.
All right, next up from Game Informer, Epic Games lays off over 800 employees. Epic Games has announced it is laying off roughly 16% of its workforce, resulting in around 830 employees losing their jobs. In a statement posted by Epic President Tim Sweeney, he explains the layoffs as a cost-cutting measure that will include divesting Bandcamp, which it acquired last year, and spinning off advertising platform Super Awesome into an independent company. For a while now, we've been spending way more money than we can earn, investing in the evolution of Epic and growing Fortnite as a metaverse-inspired ecosystem for creators, Sweeney writes in his statement. I had long been optimistic that we could power through this transition without layoffs, but in retrospect, I see that this was unrealistic. Sweeney then explains that despite taking steps to reduce costs, such as scaling back on marketing and events, Epic still fell short of achieving financial stability and that layoffs were the only solution. Sweeney states that 2/3 of the terminations come from teams outside of core development and that these departures will not come at the expense of game development or lines of business. Sweeney also says this will be the only round of layoffs and that Epic will still be hiring for critical roles. Development of content for titles such as Fortnite, Fall Guys, and Rocket League will continue as planned. A big company meeting is scheduled for next month to discuss the company's efforts and priorities. These layoffs come just a few weeks after Epic's chief creative officer and Fortnite head Donald Mustard announced his retirement. Must not make Colonel Mustard joke. Must not.
That's a hell of a name, Donald Mustard.
At the risk of making a joke of such a terrible situation for these employees, it was probably Colonel Mustard in the office with the pen signing the layoffs.
Yep.
I apologize. You can hate me for that.
This is something that's happening quite all over. Right. And the video game industry is no stranger to it. You know, it's just because you work in a game industry that seems to be just raking in all the cash. And you kind of wonder, like, maybe what are the upper executives of Epic Games doing to prevent the amount of layoffs that they have to do? You know, are you kind of giving up a little bit of your salary to do this? Is this something where Epic Games, the company, just hired too many people because they thought they had broad aspirations?
What's coming to mind for me is that it would probably be a lot cheaper if you didn't have to have a harem of lawyers on retainer every time you wanted to sue someone like Epic does with Apple. I mean, that probably cost them quite a few people's jobs. That was way more than a bunch of these people's salaries, is all I'm going to say.
Right. Well, and okay, so then there were headlines earlier today. Epic Games asked the Supreme Court to hear its case against Apple's App Store rules again. Like, never mind, we've been over this for a few years. We're doing this again. Yeah. On the same day, we're laying off 800 people. So, yeah, your point is valid.
Mm-hmm. We're still going to pay the lawyers.
Yeah, the lawyers right. get their money. Don't you worry.
That reminds me of the scene in A Few Good Men when she does an objection. He's like, overruled. And she's like, we strenuously object. He's like, overruled. No, we'd have to, I wanted to go on record that I object. Like,
I've already heard your objection. I said it. It's noted. Move on.
You know, the same thing with Epic asking the Supreme Court or whatever court to hear them again, or the FTC coming back to Microsoft and saying, right, hey.
Which is also happening again.
Right.
And the whole like, hey, you know what, we'll hire still for critical roles and that kind of stuff. It's like, well, do you really want to work for a company that is willing to do that? Willing to spend their money on things that are almost frivolous in a way?
What, you mean like investing in the next evolution of Epic and growing Fortnite as a metaverse-inspired ecosystem for creators?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
You mean that? You mean something like that? You know, everything with NFTs and the metaverse and all of these people who said, no, it's the next big thing. You're going to be so rich, and none of it has panned out. You know, we have kind of enjoyed poking fun at those people, but unfortunately, here are real people being impacted by these big companies jumping on this bandwagon that hasn't panned out. And that's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like we saw this coming.
Like pyramid schemes don't work.
Oh, and I remember them in this article as well talking about stock options. Do you think Epic stock is going to do real well after they just announced any layoffs? My guess is that's going to be a loss, a net loss for you if you decide to sell your stock options in Epic right now.
Right. And then let's not forget what we talked about a few weeks ago, Epic's new program that lets developers keep their revenue in exchange for exclusivity.
Ah.
Epic lets developers keep 88% of their revenues, with the company taking 12%. But for their first run program, they get all the revenue. I hope what's funding the 12% for the creators is not necessarily coming at the expense of the Epic workforce.
Right. It's like they threw a company party and was like, oh, beer and drugs and booze. Let's all come back on Monday. By the way, here is your pink slip. I hope you enjoyed the party.
Did you have a good weekend?
Great.
I mean, it's never easy, I imagine, to do mass layoffs, but at least you could read the room first.
Right.
All right, let's move on to our top three new releases.
All right, first up is El Paso Elsewhere, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and PC. El Paso Elsewhere is a supernatural, neo-noir, third-person shooter. Hunt werewolves, fallen angels, and other damned creatures in a vivid slow-motion love letter to the action classics. Fight your way through a reality-shifting motel, floor by bloody floor, save the victims of Dracula, Lord of the Vampires, destroy the villains you loved, even if it means dying yourself. A fully voiced neo-noir story campaign set in a reality-shifting motel full of monsters. Next up is Cocoon, Xbox Series XS, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. From the lead gameplay designer of Limbo and Inside, Cocoon is a unique take on the puzzle-adventure genre, where each world exists with an orb that you can carry on your back. Wrap your head around the core mechanic of leaping between worlds and combine, manipulate, and rearrange them to solve intricate puzzles. Mighty guardians protect every world, and you might face them in fierce battles. Each fight is unique and requires you to master new and satisfying mechanics. And lastly, Infinity Strash, Dragon's Quest, The Adventure of Dai. Day? Dai? Day?
Day-o!
Rolling with it. PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Switch, and PC. The memories of the hero in your hands.
Say what now? In your
hand. The joke is in your hand. Experience the story of a legendary anime series, Dragon Quest, The Adventure of Day, in an exhilarating action role-playing game that combines stunning visuals with art form, the anime, and manga. Just taking a look at these three. Donnie, what you going with this week?
Let me first start off by saying the way you pronounced it, Day, it's like D-A-I, right? Mm-hmm. How is Ninja Gaiden spelled? I'm just throwing that out there.
How is Oregon spelled?
Oregon. It's Oregon. Taking a look at Infinity Strash, it does not look appealing to me. So that one's immediately out. When I saw Cocoon, I'm like, they're making a game based on the 1980s yes. movie with Steve Guttenberg and Wilford Brimley? Like, okay, I can get into this. And you got aliens, old people having sex. All right. I took a look at the game. It looks visually stunning. It's a puzzle action platformer. I think it might be worthy of checking it out. And then I took a look at El Paso Elsewhere. And the description is supernatural neo-noir third-person shooter with bullet time. So I'm looking at gameplay, and it immediately made me think of Max Payne. Like 100% with all the bullet time and everything, the slow motion, the shooting, the double weapon or the double pistols in your hands. The idea is interesting. You're in a hotel that's constantly changing. You have vampires. The graphics are a little PS2-ish. But if you can get past that, I think it might have an interesting concept on their hands. So I am going to go with El Paso Elsewhere this week.
Excellent choice.
Thank you.
Blue, what about you?
I actually don't think this is a bad lineup for a week. Mm-hmm. Infinity Strash, it looks like an action RPG, anime type stuff. I'm not the biggest Dragon Quest person, but in a pinch, I think it would be fun. El Paso Elsewhere, a neo-noir third-person shooter hunting down werewolves and fallen angels and in a shape-shifting hotel room. Yeah, that sounds fine, but when Cocoon says from the lead gameplay designer of Limbo and Inside, that's all I needed to hear. I love those games. A puzzle adventure platformer, rearranging worlds to get to the answers. Yes, I will be getting this. Absolutely.
Nice.
Did Hunter S. Thompson work on El Paso Elsewhere? Because it looks like it could be one of his fever dreams.
Maybe they the developers just had the same artistic motivation.
Air quotes.
Air quotes. What about you, Ryan?
So I am a big fan of Dragon Quest, the games themselves. I've never gotten into the anime or the manga. As I understand, they're great. It's just that's something where I'm concerned that I'm going to walk into it expecting Dragon Quest and not exactly getting the same experience. So I'm cautiously optimistic about that one, but it probably is more of a wait and see for me.
You got Dragon Quest at home.
Which I do. I've got plenty of Dragon Quest at home. Cocoon, I also, Donnie, thought it was like, wait.
That is a very niche audience right there.
Yes, they'll sell tens of copies.
But puzzle adventure game.
Come on.
It's a f*** this sh-, I'm out. But El Paso Elsewhere looks kind of fun. I mean, I'm a big fan of kind of the old school Universal and Hammer films, monsters and stuff. So you've already got my interest there, right? The idea that this is the villains that you loved way back in the day, right? And then to kind of add some of that, as Donnie pointed out, kind of Max Payne level of gameplay, I think it should be super fun. I like that it's not on PlayStation. So if I play it, I can go on Twitter and talk about it. And all everyone who's a big fan of PlayStation gets all upset. So
what?
Oh.
He's trolling them.
Are we feuding with the Sony ponies?
Not yet. This is my in.
You know, side note, my neighbor, his license plate is Pony Boy. And I keep wanting to go over and knock on his door and ask to see his collection of PlayStations.
I'm going to say it's probably he's a brony.
Or he's a fan of the book Outsiders.
No, the license plate's on a Mustang.
Yeah, so he's definitely, this guy's a brony. He is a fan of My Little Pony. I'm telling you right now. I'm going to go in there and it's going to be dolls of My Little Pony all over the house.
Dolls, huh?
Mm-hmm.
They're action figures. Okay.
Yeah.
Not when they're My Little Pony.
No, a doll has to be a human likeness to be a doll.
No, but if you can brush something's hair, it's not an action figure.
So all the little boys with their He-Man toys, they're dolls now?
You can't brush He-Man's hair. They don't have hair to brush.
Little blonde hair. You sure?
No, they never
made a brushable He-Man hair toy.
Nope. They never did.
No one ever did.
No one.
I'm Googling this.
You don't. You ruined my childhood.
Take that, He-Man!
You ain't gonna find shit.
You can't find shit.
I actually cannot find shit, so.
Thank you.
I'm so disappointed.
There. Okay, so. It. You know what? Fine. You're right. There is one figure.
Oh.
One. Oh. Out of the entire line, there is one figure, and it's the Titus figure. It's Titus the Giant.
I knew it.
From 1987. He's got actual Barbie-like hair.
That is the only one.
And you know what? If you knew it was good for you, you wouldn't leave this in the episode.
if you knew it was good for you, you wouldn't have mentioned that.
It's okay. I'm not going to judge you for your He-Man doll.
I don't have that one, okay?
It's Googling it right now. eBay, buy it now.
How did we even get here?
Because we started talking about bronies.
Yeah.
Okay. That was quite the rabbit trail. Moving on. All right, let's move on to our main topic.
From Destructoid, 10 games that need their own 99 version. I remember when Nintendo first announced Tetris 99. It was such an insane idea. Playing Tetris like it was a battle royale with 98 other people, or CPUs? But as the saying goes, the idea was just crazy enough for it to work, as there have been times where Tetris 99 is the only reason I have a Switch. That's the author, that's not me. In the time since this revolutionary way of playing Tetris was released and today, it's been made clear that Nintendo wants to turn 99-type games into a genre. We've had the short-lived Super Mario Bros. 35 that, while technically not a 99-type game, plays the exact same way as if it were. Pac-Man 99, a chaotic twist on the classic game, and now we have F-Zero 99, leading the younger generations to ask, what's F-Zero?
Ouch.
In any case, the question of the day is, what's next? We have Tetris, Pac-Man, Mario, and F-Zero, and presumably the next big variant is being played as of writing. So if we had an unlimited budget and no one to tell us no, what games would we like to see emerge as a 99-type game?
All right, coming in number 10, we have Balloon Fight. Balloon Fight seems to be screaming for a competitive variant. If they really wanted to foster chaos, they could put all players into the same level and watch the popping begin. But I could also see it manifesting like Super Mario Bros. 35, where players would effectively be tasked with racking up the highest score.
Number 9, Dig Dug. I used to love playing Dig Dug and other classics on my grandma and my grandma.
Play it on your grandma?
With my grandma in the Namco Museum compilation for PlayStation 2. God, this person's so young.
Yeah, no stretch.
It was one of the only gaming experiences we shared, but sentimentally aside, Dig Dug, like Balloon Fight and several other titles on this list, would be perfect for a 99 type of gameplay.
Galaga. I could probably list most of the old Namco classics in this list, but I'll draw the line here with Galaga. I think this one could work in much the same way that Tetris 99 does, where enemies you defeat are sent over to your opponents until they are overwhelmed. And then, in an interesting twist, if you were to die, you could choose to send a helping hand to another player in the form of an extra ship.
Coming in number 7, we have Super Mario Kart. I'm in. I shouldn't need to explain this one, especially if you've ever played Mario Kart 8 with strangers online. It's a firm opinion of mine that if you need to check your ego, play Mario Kart 8 with strangers online, because when you emerge on the other side, you'll be utterly demoralized. Let's do that, but with pixelated 16-bit sprites. It might create world peace, but it could also result in World War 3. That's a risk I think we'll just have to take.
Or just play with Blue. You don't have to play with strangers. Number 6, Puyo Puyo. Puyo Puyo, or as most here in North America first heard of it, Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, would be an excellent addition to the 99-type genre because it's already practically a Tetris variant. To be honest, it kind of surprises me that there hasn't been an acknowledgement of Puyo Puyo in Tetris 99 yet, considering the existence of Puyo Puyo Tetris, a full crossover game that has received a sequel in the late 2020s.
In at number 5, Metroid. Huh? I think a potential Metroid 99 would probably need to follow in Super Mario Bros. 35 and not be 99 players. It would probably be very dependent on level progression, which might be very complicated to keep track of with more than 50 players. There's little chance it wouldn't be fun, however.
At number four, it's Donkey Kong. To be very clear, I mean the original Donkey Kong, Barrel's Jumpman the Works. I mean, the game was designed to be played indefinitely, so it makes sense to reframe it with an online content. Let's see who could survive the longest against Donkey Kong and maybe hand out awards for highest score as well.
Number three is Super Mario World. I don't need to say much about this one because in my imagination, it functioned in much the same way as Super Mario Bros. 35 did, only it'd be Super Mario World instead. But I'd insist that they total participants to at least 50 to sharpen the competitive edge and increase the chaos.
Sliding in at number two, The Legend of Zelda. To be honest, I am very surprised we don't currently have this. It seemed the best time to do this would have been the 35th anniversary celebration of The Legend of Zelda in 2021. But it's still not too late, as we're already halfway to the franchise's 40th anniversary in 2026. So get cracking, Nintendo.
And in number one, we have WarioWare Inc. I don't know about you, but an infinite loop of competitive microgames sounds like a truly good time to me. It's the kind of thing that appeals most to my limited attention span, and there's nothing quite like playing a bunch of competitive online minigames to appeal to my ADHD-addled brain. I need this to happen, and I need it to happen now.
Give me Dr. Mario 99.
Yes.
Yeah, please. Right. Like, I was scrolling through this list, fully expecting that Dr. Mario would be number one. And not only was it not number one, it's not even on the freaking list. I mean, that's the most obvious answer out there.
But Puyo Puyo is.
But Puyo Puyo right. is. I hate Puyo Puyo.
I don't mind Puyo Puyo. It's fun. I've played a lot of Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, and it's fun. But it doesn't hold a candle to Dr. Mario or Tetris, in my opinion.
No, and I have both Puyo Puyo Tetris 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. The thing that keeps me from progressing in those games is the Puyo Puyo part.
I must say that Super Mario Kart, if they turned that into a 99 level type game, I would never touch it. Really? I get so frustrated with how many times I'm playing with just 12 people when I'm in a good position. The next thing you know, bam, a shell comes up, hits me. I start to go and somebody comes by that's affected by the star, the invincibility star, and they knock me off the course. Next thing you know, I'm in 12th and oh, look, the person right ahead of me, they're able to get a star or get something like a bullet bill that sends them all the way to first place. And I'm still here in 12th with a coin. I would rage quit like you wouldn't believe, and I would never touch my Switch again.
Can you imagine getting a bullet bill at the back of the pack and just mauling over like an entire group of people like it's yes. the Peloton? The Tour de France, just decimating people. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, if they can make F-Zero 99 work, in theory, there's no reason why they couldn't make Super Mario Kart work or some sort right. of Mario Kart 99. It wouldn't have to be Super Mario Kart or anything.
Right. I mean, there are some good games on here, but Metroid, Legend of Zelda, Super Mario World, I don't see how those could work. I thoroughly would pick any of the original black box games from Nintendo, like yeah. Slalom, Balloon Fight, like he said, maybe Wild Gunman. Actually, I don't know how you can do that with a
modern controller. Yeah.
Right. Rad Racer, RC Pro-Am, any of those. Those are good.
The one that was coming to mind was Kung Fu, right?
Yes.
And you send other, like those grabby guys to other people or something like that. That would be super fun, I think. It's an annoying game.
But- yeah, I think you guys are correct in that those old black box games would work well in a 99 format, but I think you're missing the most crucial point in that you want people to like it and play it.
I mean, I'll like
yeah.
it.
am I not people? Do I not fall into that category?
They're not going to make a 99 game that only people in their 40s and up are going to play.
I disagree. Were the younger crowds playing Tetris before this? Before Tetris 99?
There's been so many variants of Tetris that it's always been kind of slightly relevant and accessible. So I would argue that, yes, they probably were.
Mm-hmm. They're probably all playing Tetris Effect and stuff.
Maybe they can go like indie here and do like a battle kit.
Oh.
Oh, God.
Super Meat Boy 99.
Exactly, right? Oh. Pick the hardest fucking game you can imagine. Or expand out Splatoon to make it a battle royale.
Just like Call of Duty, only with the squidlings.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
99 people.
I'm trying to think what else would be a good 99 game. And I'm looking at mostly NES games, and I think that's probably a poor choice.
Why? There's a lot of good NES games.
No, I'm saying, you know, we've already kind of discussed that the NES was a good system for a lot of these, but I'm trying to think of like what else would be good.
I'm trying to think of something that's not a retro game.
Perky Little Things.
Oh. Isn't that just a hidden object game, though?
I've actually never played it. It's sitting on my shelf sealed.
What about Super Smash TV?
Oh, my God. That'd be so fun.
Good call.
Like, that's something you could really screw with other people in, like, other rooms. Like, sending over, like, you clear it, you can send over, like, another horde. When they think they're done, it's like, bam, then they die.
Actually, you know what else I think would work really well? Are cozy games like Stardew Valley. Stardew Valley 99. Suddenly, you have a lot of choices in who you want to marry.
What is this, Utah?
Oh, jeez.
Marble Madness 99?
Ooh. Oh. It's already frustrating as it is.
No,
with an NES controller.
Right. And without having 99 other players just tossing your marble right off the side. Moo, I can hear that noise too. No.
Madden 99, rather than having 11 players. Just two teams of, you know, 50 just running at each other.
It's
going
to be real hard to get open.
Just toss the ball up and watch it bounce between yep. players until it lands in someone's hands and everybody crushes that person.
Everything's a Hail Mary.
It's like a pachinko machine.
All right, before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by A Gamer Looks at 40 podcast. The show explores the history of video games through the stories and experiences of the people who lived it. Join host Bill Tucker along with a rotating cast of friends, family, podcasters, journalists, and anybody with a story to tell as they go beyond the bits and bytes to share personal recollections of the last 30 years of gaming. This Monday, the fifth and final part of Bill's Earthbound series drops with a focus on the game's passionate community. Today's question is, in your personal experience, what game's fandom is the most welcoming and which is the most toxic? Let Bill know your answer by replying to his pinned tweet at @agamerlooksat40 on Twitter. This is a tough one for me because I don't play online games. I specifically avoid them.
Well, I don't think you really need to just focus on online games. Like, when people talk about playability and history and lore and interpretation, I'm assuming there are a trove of single player games out there that people are like really passionate about. And if you try to say like, oh, it's like I have a different opinion on how this should be viewed, and they're like, oh, you shut the fuck up. That's not exactly how that goes. And
oh, you just got my answer for most toxic, Kingdom Hearts. Boom, there you go.
Oh. Why such the hate with Kingdom Hearts?
He does it because I like those games.
What? Me? No.
There you go. Reverse toxicity. It's not the fandom that's toxic. It's Ryan stirring the pot.
It was me the whole time.
The call is coming from inside the fandom.
Welcome to News Rewind, where we look at gaming headlines from decades past. Tonight, we're looking at the CES coverage from the July-August 1983 volume of Atari Age magazine. Just flew in from Chicago, and boy, are my arms tired. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
But seriously, folks, I did just get back from the Summer Consumer Electronics Show in Chicago, and I was amazed at the things I saw there. The phrase consumer electronics covers a wide range, everything from computers and robots to televisions, stereos, and pocket calculators, with electric typewriters, cordless telephones, and wristwatches thrown in for good measure. And the major manufacturers of all these products have booths at CES, where they display their latest creations to buyers from retail stores and to the press.
As little as 5 years ago, the spotlight at this twice-a-year expedition was on the latest in stereos and color televisions. Today, these items still have their place, but the focus has shifted dramatically to the computer world. The talk of the show is hardware and software, bytes and disk drives, video games and home computer applications. And leading in the industry at Summer CES in June was Atari, with two people, packed exhibits, and literally dozens of astounding announcements. On these two pages, we've tried to capture a taste of the Atari excitement unveiled at CES. And by the way, this is 1983, right?
Yeah. Right. You can tell.
Harbinger.
Pocket calculators didn't stand out to you?
Atari took a bold step forward in the home computer line by introducing four new home computers at Consumer Electronics Show. They range from the 600XL with price and features, which make it very attractive for beginning computer users, to the very sophisticated 1450XL, which comes complete with 64K memory and a built-in disk drive, direct connect modem, and speech synthesizer. An extremely important consideration in developing these new computers was full system compatibility. That means that the full range of programs and peripherals will work with all four new models, and with the 400, 800, and 1200XL models already in distribution. Not only does this ensure the tremendous variety of software availability, it also allows users to trade up in the future for more advanced basic computers, without sacrificing the investment they've made in Atari hardware and software.
Atari is making it easier for all of us to explore the eye-popping world of computer graphics. At CES, the company introduced reasonably priced versions of two devices, which have traditionally been available only as expensive tools used mostly by professional graphic artists, the LightPen and the Touch Tablet Controller. The LightPen, designed and developed for Atari by Steve Gibson, allows the user to interact with the computer by simply pointing the pen at the TV screen. This capability can be used in programs to allow users to make selections directly from the screen without ever touching a computer key. But probably the most exciting use of the LightPen is in creating computer graphics. As demonstrated to admiring crowds at CES, the LightPen can be used to draw directly on the TV screen. Lines and colors appear instantly on the screen, and the pictures created can be changed over and over again, then saved with cassette recorder or disk drive for future enjoyment or incorporation in a program.
I feel incredibly old when I read this.
Well, this was 83, so this was summer 83, so it was almost exactly 40 years ago.
Yeah, wow. I was 5 years old.
I was negative two. It is an interesting look into kind of what computers were looking like at the time, because prior to the early 80s, computers were pretty much inaccessible to most people. They were more of a luxury item than anything else. And as soon as the 80s hit, there was a lot of companies out there like Commodore and Spectrum and Atari that were trying to make computers for kind of the average person. So one of the things that they wanted to do, of course, was still be in that marketplace of kind of a luxury item too. So a lot of what you see from Atari is they're trying to play the field. They're trying to get as many people interested in their Atari products. And what's also interesting about this is that the Atari computers didn't really suffer from the same experience that the Atari consoles did. So even though 1983, July and August of 1983 is probably not a good time for Atari at this moment, they are on the cusp of losing a large chunk of their business. There was still a lot of investment that was being done in the computer side of it. So it's an interesting look into that, the fact that they were putting so much focus on trying to create new consumers for these kind of mini computers, if you will.
It is a little shocking that because of the fallout of the video game industry, that the computer portion of it didn't suffer as much.
Right.
Because I would have thought that anybody sees the Atari name, they're like, ugh, that's like, they put out products. Why would I want to go and touch an Atari computer?
And I think the interesting part about that is probably the folks who were interested in Atari computers probably weren't interested in a 2600. So the name, yes, it may have suffered, but it's, I guess it's the same kind of thing. Like, you know, if you were to buy a Chrysler and you like Chryslers, you don't really care that Plymouth sucks.
Fair.
Yeah.
I like this idea of the light pen, which is makes it easier for all of us to explore the eye-popping world of computer graphics. And then you think about what sort of eye-popping graphics you got from a 2600.
I mean, that was revolutionary, though. Think about that. If you watch somebody actually draw on a screen, can you imagine just losing your shit over that? Because that's something that had really never been done before, especially from a consumer side of things.
I remember seeing older videos of them actually using the light pen in action. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is the pinnacle of technology. Like, where are we going to go from here?
And the crazy part is, like, 2 years prior, they were still touting color TVs as a big deal.
Right.
Right. I mean, how old were you guys when your families got color TVs?
I was very early. It was, I think, 80. No, my parents had a color TV. They had the rabbit ears. So, like, I remember as far back as I can remember, like 3 or 4, like, we had a color TV.
I'm going to be accused of being a rich kid here, but it's also I was born after you guys, so I've always had a color TV.
All right. Well, I do remember very early on watching cartoons and stuff on a black and white TV. So I guess I'm both old and poor.
Oh, our different upbringings.
I do find it funny that you could save this stuff to a cassette recorder.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I wonder if you polled anybody who is between the ages of like 18 to 12, if they could tell you what a cassette recorder is. Like if you handed them a cassette and said, what is this?
Don't they do those kind of things on YouTube where you get the gifts of the boy holding the original Game Boy going, I feel sorry for kids in the past.
And then that particular video, they're like, well, where are the apps?
Right, trying to touch the screen and you're just like,
here's the cart. There's your app. The phrase consumer electronics covers a wide range. Everything from computers and robots to television stereos and pocket calculators with electric typewriters, cordless telephones, and wristwatches. So you mean an iPhone?
All of those things fit in your pocket now, huh?
Exactly.
I'm trying to see if there's anything that wouldn't be there, but you're right.
How old were you guys when you got cordless phones in your house?
Ooh, that was like the...
That was until the 90s.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember my mom had the extra long cord in the kitchen, right? The one that was like 30 feet long. I do remember that.
But of course, it'd been wound into a little ball.
Right.
And they never wanted to unwind. So it was a pain in the ass to use. My favorite part about the pocket calculator is how every math teacher you ever had in school said, you have to know how to do this because you won't always have a calculator with you.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Go back and just kind of like, you see this phone? Huh? You see, I always have to have it by my side. Look at it. Look at it. It's got a calculator in it.
You take that, Mr. Davis.
Not only that, I can download any kind of app I want and it will do math for me.
Yup.
I remember having to spend like the cost of a video game console to get a graphing calculator for math in high school.
Yep. Right, because it was required for a class. You were just barely going to pass anyway.
I just remember that the only real application I had on that is that people would trade games. So I had like Tetris and Jez Ball. And
what kind of ball?
Yeah, but it's an E, not an I. Thank you. and it was one where like the ball jumps back and forth between the space, and then you put like a little cursor over there to try to cut off a certain section of the board without the ball hitting that area. Okay. So yeah, you're trying to like decrease the play field, and of course the ball would bounce faster. Yeah, it was fun.
Was it fun, or is it just because you were trapped?
Looking back at it, probably the second, the latter.
Because it's like playing Snake on your really early cell phones.
Yes, yes.
It's not fun, but it's all you had on the phone.
Right.
I remember one time my brother got a flat tire at college and I was visiting him. And I had to wait at the gas station for the tire shop to open. So I waited for like 4 hours in his car. And oh, that's God. All I had. All I had was Snake for 4 hours on the littlest screen, you know, flip phone. Yeah.
I'm surprised your battery didn't die in 4 hours of that.
Back in the day, those batteries lasted forever because they didn't take a lot to run the phone.
You talk about phones in the home. I remember when my dad got one of those cool, they almost looked like the office Cisco phones, where it had the several different lines on it. You could have all the different buttons on the receiver, that not just the numbered buttons, but like call waiting, put on hold, transfer, all this stuff. And he got this because he had started a carpet cleaning business.
Ah.
That, like, I wasn't allowed to touch that phone. I could go use the phone, the other cordless phone, or my dad was very weird with technology. Like, I guess he thought I was stupid, that I couldn't understand stuff. But I mean, I didn't go down to Radio Shack when my mom and dad and sister went to go take the computer courses for the Tandy computer that he bought. I was like, screw that. I don't want to sit through that. That's boring. And he's like, well, if you didn't take that, you don't know how to use it. I sit there and watch him how to do stuff, how to load up the operating system or how to load up games via DOS. And I'm just like, okay, all right, let's just mimic what he did. And whenever he wasn't there, I'd load up Leisure Suit Larry or Liar's Dice or the bar games and stuff like that and play those.
Which is funny because now you work in IT.
Should have taken that class, Donnie.
Didn't need it.
All right, let's go ahead and wrap up the show. Thank you for listening to episode 92 of Gamers Week Podcast. And a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast, Love Retro BTW, and A Gamer Looks at 40 Podcast for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at Gamers Week PC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Watch us on Twitch at twitch.tv/gamersweekpodcast. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. Join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. And finally, since you made it all the way to the end of this episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice.
So Leisure Suit Larry 99?
Or Plumbers Don't Wear Ties 99?
You know, they actually just re-released that on...
Yeah, that's why it came to mind.
I don't know if I'm going to pick it up.
You know you're going to pick it up. Come on.
I also think it's kind of funny that they're releasing... basically a porn game on the Switch, the Nintendo.
Howard Lincoln rolling around. Oh, God, yep. No.
I never should have said what I said.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, folks.
Thanks, oops, I voted other.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your dick fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.